She meant that in a very positive way. So I'm so excited to see so many people here and all that stuff out there and just sort of feel the energy in the room. It's awesome. And I know we have a couple new ladies in our Bible study this year, but even for some of you veterans, I thought it might be worthwhile to talk about what the genesis of this idea, you know, why we're doing this service day. And so what happened was a couple years ago, Mary Zollman, who I don't see Mary here this morning, but she needed to move all of her mom's stuff out of her house, and she was sort of overwhelmed by the task that was ahead of her, and she shared that with her small group. And so her small group took it upon themselves to all go over to Mary's mom's house one day and help her with that. They served Mary. And when Terry Pollock, who at the time was heading up our women's ministries here at Grace, and so she was in charge of this Bible study, when she heard about that sweet story, she thought, it would be great to carve out a morning here for our study so we as a group of women together could serve. And of course, Scripture's filled with verses that talk about loving our neighbor and serving other people. We've only been studying Philippians for 3 weeks, but we already know that Paul viewed the Philippians as co-workers who were laboring with him to share the gospel message. And Terry taught last week, and she talked about being in Christ and what that might look like in our lives. And when Christina taught the week before, she talked about making Philippians 1, 9 through 11 sort of the central or goal verse for the women here at Grace. That verse begins with Paul writing, "And this I pray, that your love may abound." And it ends with this exhortation, "Being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God." And for those of you who were here this last Sunday, Dave talked about our faith expressing itself as love. And he talked about the fact that God works in our lives with the goal of making us more loving people. So the hope is that this morning that we can love other people and show them God's love through serving them. So you might wonder, well, why do we do it here? Why don't we go out into the community and actually serve in ministry? And the answer is, we thought about that. And it turns out it's really hard to find a ministry that can absorb anywhere from 30 to 70 women from 9 to 11 on Wednesday morning. So we realized that's not going to work, so we had to try to serve some ministries here on site. The downside of that is that, as you all have experienced, what that means is that you go shopping and you buy stuff, and then you bring it here, and we're going to assemble it into care packages. And that might not feel real hands-on, that might not feel super dynamic, and you might not allow you to feel a real sense of connection to the people that you're actually serving. And so to try to deal with that issue, we're going to have a woman come up to talk about each of the three ministries that they're affiliated with this morning to sort of put a human face on it so that you will hopefully feel more of a connection later this morning when you're putting together some stuff for either Trellis or Safe Families or John Weisberg's Squadron. And you may find that it might not take all that long to do that. And so you'll also find in each of the rooms that you're going to be working in some stationery, some plain paper, and some pens. And that's there for you guys to write notes of encouragement and affirmation. Write to the Safe Families who are hosting babies and children so they don't have to go into the foster care system. Write a note of affirmation to one of the homeless people in Costa Mesa that's served by Trellis. Or write to the military personnel who, along with John, is going to be serving us and serving our country when they're deployed on an aircraft carrier in the Middle East in a couple months. The groups that are serving Trellis and John's squadron are also going to find some of these in their rooms. It's called a pocket testament guide, and what it is, it's pretty neat. It's very small, very lightweight, but it has the Gospel of John. It has a summary of the gospel message. And in the front, it asks some probing questions like, why am I here? Where am I going? And how can I find my way to God? So these things can be tucked into the care packages as well, along with all the other things that you brought this morning. So as you work this morning to serve one of these three ministries, I hope that you remember that you are working along with Paul and the other saints to serve, and that when we show our love to other people this morning, through us, they're going to feel the love of God. And so what you're doing, even if it doesn't feel super hands-on because you're not out there in the community, it's real, and it can have an eternal impact on people. So the first person that we're going to hear from this morning is Diane, and she's going to talk with us about John Squadron and maybe share with us what happened 2 years ago when we shipped off about 50 boxes to his squadron the first time he was deployed. He's getting ready to go on a second deployment in May. After Diane, Penny Popoff is going to come up and talk to us a little bit about how the Trellis Ministry serves the homeless population in Costa Mesa. Here's the clicker, if you need it. And then finally, Leanne Sheward is going to come up and talk about the Safe Families Ministry. And then Christina will come up. And after Christina's done, there'll be time for you to, you know, take a bathroom break, get some coffee, get a snack, and then you'll head out to your assigned rooms. So if you are one of the two groups serving John Weisberg's squadron this morning, you're going to go to the multipurpose room, which is just to the left of the main entrance going into the church. If you are one of the groups serving Trellis, you're going to be in the second and third grade room, and Penny will be in there coordinating that. Diane will be in the multipurpose room coordinating the service for John's squadron. And then finally, if you are serving Safe Families, you will be in the fourth and fifth grade room, and that's down the same hallway where you'll find the second, third grade room where the kids are normally in their Sunday school. And Leanne will be organizing the women in that room. So could you please close with me in prayer, and then Diane will come up. Heavenly Father, I just ask that you bless our efforts this morning. I ask that you work in our hearts so that our love may abound and so that we can show your love to other people, and that through our efforts to serve this morning that people will be drawn to you. And so I hope that the implications of what happens this morning are like when a rock is dropped in the middle of a pond and the ripples go out a long distance and long after the time when the rock falls into the water. And so I just ask that, again, that you bless our efforts and that we are able to effectively love on other people and show your love to them. And this is all for your glory. So I ask that we do it with enthusiasm, and that at the end of the day, some homeless people and some military people and the Safe Family hosts feel our love and feel your love. And I thank you for this study and giving us the opportunity to serve. And I thank you for all these things in your son's name. All right, so Diane.
Well, I'm so excited to be here today to talk about the first ministry that we're supporting. And my heart is humbled that we are supporting them, because I saw 2 years ago what an impact just our care packages and our prayers made. My son, for those of you who were not here 2 years ago, John Weisberg, he started back at the Naval Academy about 10 years ago. And many people have asked me, is it hard to see someone that you care about go on deployment? And I thought it was harder for me 10 years ago to flash forward and know that that was the plan that God had for him. Once God had him in his hands, I knew that wherever he was going to take him in the world was far better than where I could be if he was right here next to me. And he's had an opportunity to interact with people from all over the world. So that is why today, having this be our service project, we have an ability to share God's word with the world. So I'm going to give you a little overview on the Dwight D. Eisenhower, which was, it is one of our nuclear carriers, and it has was commissioned in 1977. It has just undergone 2 years of retrofitting to modernize it, and the John's Squadron is the first to go out on it under its retrofit. It is a nuclear aircraft carrier with two reactors, and the reactors actually help run the aircraft carrier. On the aircraft carrier is about 1.5 million gallons of gasoline that actually fuel the planes that operate on the aircraft carrier. The flight deck is 4.5 acres. And that whole carrier is there to operate the 60 airplanes that is our front in a war overseas. This aircraft carrier will most likely be going to the Persian Gulf to support the war against ISIS and our enduring freedom in Afghanistan. This is the flight deck of the Ike. It is the home to about 5,500 sailors, and these are actually the sailors that are going to be on board it when it leaves for deployment. Their workday is about 12 to 18 hours, 7 days a week. My son said on the carrier, it's either Sunday or not Sunday. They don't really know if it's Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, because Sunday, they do have religious ceremonies on board. And the rest of the week, it's business as usual. Rain or shine, they are out there supporting these airplanes. These are the ordinances. Basically, a 500-pound bomb weighs 500 pounds. So when they have to get it up onto that airplane to go into the zones, they are lifting 500 pounds and securing them to the airplane. The flight deck is very busy, and that is where our main operations is. But there's a whole world below the flight deck. We have a cargo carrier that operates the 5,500 sailors that live there. This is the barracks that they sleep in. They sleep in three high bunks, and they get a little area to put all their personal belongings. There's laundry. There's no cell phones. They have to use pay phones to call home. And every meal they go to is a reminder of the cost of war. It is a table set for the POWs and the MIAs that is there at every meal they serve in. It's very exciting to see what our military can do. But we can have the mightiest military in the world. But if we don't have God on our side, we've lost. So that's where we come to today. John's squadron is about 350 people. It is a 300 enlisted and about 30 to 50 officers that guide them. And this is a picture of my son, John, coming off of his last deployment. What are we doing here today? First of all, there is a war room on board. I took this on his last deployment. That is a picture, and it's called the war room. And our first operation is to pray. When Sherry came to me a couple months ago, I said, I'm not really sure when they are supposed to go out, but I know it will be the middle of this year. Just this week, they were assigned that they will be leaving in May, and I just think it is God's way of confirming that we are here at the beginning of the process. Prayer is important. I had on our John's last deployment, I had an officer come up to me and said, I've never been on a deployment where there has not been a fatality or a major injury. Anytime you get 5,500 people together for 9 months of sequestered service, things happen. And I really firmly believe that our prayers made a difference. So the first step is praying. And we're praying from the very beginning of the deployment. So it's exciting. Today, we're also going to be packing care packages and notes. And John said on the last deployment, mail day was always the most exciting day, because you know people are thinking of you. So basically, our care packages are going to be packed up today, and we're going to ship them to the squadron, which is taking off from Virginia Beach in May. In March, they're going out for their first training exercise where they're all going to be together on the carrier. And these boxes are going to be packed on the carrier that when they leave in May, John is going to have them to decide at a point where morale is kind of low and they need a boost. And he's going to take them out of the storage area and pass them out to each of the work areas for the squadron. These are actually the people in the squadron that are going to be receiving the packages. This was taken a few months ago. And I thought this was a powerful picture because it shows how we can all work together. It's not just the people over there, it's us here. So I thought we'd take a moment and see what it's like to step into the cockpit and see what our military might has going on over there. And I have a short video that my son shot on his last deployment. Exciting to really see firsthand what our military can do and what all the training does. And now you know why it's so important to start out with prayer on at the beginning of this deployment and sending these notes of encouragement, because they're long days. Safety is paramount. And those scenes were shot over Afghanistan. The brown was the desert of Afghanistan, and the White Mountains were actually also there. And the planes were going about 500 miles per hour as they hovered over the terrain. So thank you all for partnering together today, and we're excited to see what Costa Mesa can bring to the world.
There's three slides. Is there more? Is there a video back there? She wanted to show a video.
There are two videos, but it says slides.
To help create a structure that allows followers of Christ to work together in a strategic way around the most strategic issues in that city. Right now in Costa Mesa, we are working with the homeless. We've got 16 churches working together in a strategic way to impact homelessness. We've got 8 or 9 churches working together around the issues of education in our city. We've got churches working together around immigration and crisis response. And our goal, our desire, is to create a structure that allows the church to very clearly know how they can really make a difference in their city, so that that prayer that Jesus prayed in John 17:23, where he said, Father, help them to experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you love them as much as you love me. Our vision, our goal, is to see that kind of perfect unity exist within the context of the city that allows people to see and experience the love of Jesus in very real and tangible ways. We hope that you'll consider being a part of what we're doing with Trellis. Whether you are a follower of Christ or you just want to be a part of seeing unity happen within our city, we hope that you can be a part of what we're doing. Thanks so much for listening. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hi, I'm Sean Davidson. I'm with the Watts Ministry out of the Crossing, and this is Breakfast at the Crossing. We do this event every Saturday. We do a breakfast, we have the shower trailers and the laundry trailers and the check-in center and haircuts and clothing and all kinds of services. It's all meant to bring people in. They get to come in, we get to start building relationships with them. Our goal is that through those relationships, they will eventually realize that the existence they have is not the life that God meant for them. And when they want to change, we have programs to help them make those changes. We can always use volunteers, and we'd love to have you come join us. And we've got everything you can imagine, from being social at the coffee table to cooking eggs. The biggest part of what you can do to help us is to be here and say hello and reach out to somebody who doesn't normally get to meet people. You'll meet some awesome folks that have had some hard times and are trying to change their lives.
Hello, sisters. Trellis is really an awesome ministry, and like Sean said, it's just not the homeless. It's also education, immigration, and now there's a new part of it, and that's neighboring. And did I skip one? No, that's it. And our church emphasizes the homeless ministry. And it's just the Costa Mesa homeless. I want to read a quote that I got from the Facebook page for Trellis. Trellis was born from a group of passionate people who were praying for more than 15 years in Costa Mesa. Prayer is more than a value we believe in at Trellis. We see it as the most critical element to our effectiveness. So once again, and it's prayer, and it's about prayer, and it's about love, like Davey's sermon was on Sunday. So my request is that you would all pray for the city of Costa Mesa. And I started praying not too long ago when Ian brought it up. He goes, really, we need prayers for Costa Mesa. But whatever city you're in, pray for your city. I think it's just, it was something I just didn't think of. There's about 16 churches that work together, and the Trellis Ministry started when Costa Mesa, the city of Costa Mesa, had a task force for the homeless, and so from that prayer, they all got together and started Trellis. Vanguard College, the sociology department, actually made a survey, and that survey we took to different places that we knew that the homeless congregated, and we were able to ask them all the questions that were in. It was a 5-page survey. It had every question you can't imagine. It had all the questions you always wanted to ask a homeless person, and you felt safe doing it, because it is, you have to kind of tread lightly at first when you start a relationship with some of the homeless. And from that survey, we found that there were 3 things that they needed. They needed a place to shower, a place to wash their clothes, and a place to store their belongings. So the Crossings Church has been so great. In their parking facility at one corner, we have all these bins set up, and the homeless can come 6 days a week, every morning and every evening, and check in their clothes or their belongings. And it's early in the morning that they come. And if you serve in that way, it's amazing. You get to know them and build relationships. And that's what it's really all about, is building relationship first. And then the showers, a truck has showers in it, and a truck has washing machines in it. And they pull up every Saturday at the Crossings, and a church sponsors a breakfast, because they miss the, because it's so early, they miss the breakfast that the soup kitchen serves. So we serve the breakfast. There's people that come and cut hair for them. Some people come and mend for them, and a lot of times, and there's a table with a lot of clothes, and our church does it the second, every second month on the third Sunday. So guess what? This Saturday is our time to be up, and Karina is bringing all the groceries. Is she here, Karina Van Cleef? So thankful for that. And if anybody's interested, I have a sign-up sheet. If you want to sign up to help in any way, just pass it around, and when the last person has it, put it over there, please, by the Trellis sign. And so the Lord provided those three needs. And now we're also branching out. We have the LOTS Community Impact Team, and that is training a group of homeless to go out into the workforce. They have to attend classes every Saturday. It's after the breakfast at the Crossing. And if they miss a class, their name gets put on the bottom of the list. The people that have their names on the top of the list will go out. They have bright colored t-shirts, and they have a person that manages them, and they go and work in public places for 4 hours, and after they've worked, they get a gift card. But it's just teaching them how to get back into life, how to get on back onto a schedule, and how to be responsible. And that's really exciting. Probably there's been over 100 that we've been able to find housing for or jobs that are no longer living outdoors. And that's really, really exciting. One of my very favorite homeless people just got housing, and he got it because he has COPD. And I was talking to him, and he goes, yeah, you know, that was the best thing the Lord could give me, because now he qualified for the housing because of his COPD. And a lot of them are Christian. You wouldn't believe it. And we have a lot of different programs they can attend. They can go to Bible studies, and there's all different reasons why they're homeless. You don't know until you start talking to them. And a lot of times at the breakfast, when I first started going to the breakfast, I couldn't tell who was homeless and who wasn't. It was really, okay. You just kind of talk a while and then go, oh, okay, so this guy works here. He's not homeless. But I just am so thankful for you guys and for all of the items that you purchased. And I just want to encourage you to keep praying. And thank you very much. Any questions? Any questions anybody has? Yeah. The groups are bringing some bags from IKEA that we place on top of the bins that they have, the zip-up bags, and they put, so they have bins and then they have the bags too, and those bags get weathered, and so we need a lot of those. We get, we ask for some like backpacks, some socks, like microwave food that you don't have to, that's non-perishable. Because down in the check-in center, they have a microwave and they have coffee. And they're responsible for that because it's all about giving them responsibility, about not enabling but empowering and building relationships. Yes, uh-huh. No, not as many as I thought we would, yeah, but we do. And at first I didn't think we had that many, but then now after you talk to them for a while, you find out they are military. And I don't know if some of them might not might have been discharged. What do you call that when they? Yeah, Yes, because they don't have the, some of them don't have, the benefits. But there's a lot of benefits that they all get. Most of them all have cell phones now. SOS is fabulous. They help in a lot of different ways. We're trying to, SOS is trying to, find a solution to the problem is when you sleep outside, you get sick a lot. So a lot of them go to the emergency room, and it's so expensive. So we would like permanent housing, but we haven't been able to pass that through the city yet. But SOS, now that is Hogue Hospital, will discharge him and bring him up to SOS to continue their medical treatments. Yes.
On the sign-up sheet, so it says Trellis Volunteer Interest List, but is this also to sign up for the Saturday?
Yes.
Yeah, and so what are the times?
Saturday, it's at the Crossings. Does everybody know where the Crossing is? At 7:15.
For how long?
As long as you want. But usually you end up being there a couple hours. It's really fun, and it's a quick in and out, and you've got the rest of your day. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for having us and inviting us to be part of your serve day today. I'm Leanne Sheward. I probably know most everyone, but most of you probably don't know that I'm our Grace Family Liaison for Safe Families for Children. So I kind of work with our church. My job really is to connect our church family. Hi, Barb. Our church family with our Grace families that are really serving day-to-day in this ministry. So one of my things that I'm not a Safe Family host myself, but one of the things I am tend to be good at is having been at Grace Forever, know a lot of people. And so I brought a lot of peeps with me today to help tell the story about Safe Families. So I brought with me today Jesse Ringden, who actually works for Safe Families. Remember, they're part of the Olive Crest Foundation. And so when I don't know something, I know who to go to, right? So I've got a lot of peeps that'll help answer questions. So Jesse's here with us today, and our very own in our study, Jen Jabello. She's been a host family for a while, is going to share some things. And then we also have Michelle Swamy, who's part of our church family, who has her own young family and has been a host for a long time, and Nancy Carpenter. I didn't even know she was in our study, but she is really the original Safe Family. I don't know if you all remember 15 years ago or so. That's all? Was on the front page of the Register, and she really helped start this ministry and one of the very first host families for Safe Families in our community. So she's been the poster child for a long time. So we have lots of us today to tell the story, and I'm just so thrilled. And one of my goals today in sharing with you about all these different things is sometimes people say Safe Families for Children, that sounds a little overwhelming and scary and might feel like they don't have enough time for their own families or their own making their own dinners or doing their own things, but we're going to really dispel some of those notions and share with you about lots of ways that you can get involved and how it won't be so big and scary for you. So just come on up and you can start for us.
So is this my... yes, great. Hi, I'm Jesse. I'm the Orange County Program Coordinator for Safe Families for Children, and I just love opportunities like this to be able to share with just great communities on what Safe Families does and what the need is in our very own backyards and how you can get involved. So we always like to start with this scripture. I'll just read it real quick. Father to the fatherless, defender of widows. This is our God. He makes a home for the lonely. I think this is really what Safe Families is all about. It's not just a good idea that we came up with. We really believe that it's God ordained through scripture. And this is God's heart for reaching the most vulnerable in our communities. My favorite part of that passage is that last part, he makes a home for the lonely. Most of the all of the families we work with are really isolated in our communities and are lonely and don't have a lot of support and don't have a lot of people surrounding them. So I know that's God's heart for his children to be brought into community, and it's also the church's mission and call to bring people and to not let them be lonely anymore. Just a quick one. I was talking to one of the moms we were serving, and just hearing her story, I had known her for a little bit of time and just didn't really know what brought her to the position of not having anyone around her. But she told me that she grew up in a group home because she had come from a family of abuse. And so was removed from her own family, was put in a group home, grew up without family, aged out of that, didn't have community, and still her whole family are drug addicts. And still she has a lot of fear from certain family members because of the abuse she experienced. And she's struggling, but she's really the first person in her family to start taking steps out of that cycle. So you could just see, like, that's just one small example of the families that we're reaching out to, and it's a really common story in our communities, and it's just such an honor to be able to partner with what God's doing in our communities and to make a home for the lonely. So what does that look like? What is Safe Families? In a nutshell, it's temporary and voluntary hosting for children whose parents are facing a crisis. So we have fully screened families within the community that are willing to welcome kids into their home for a short amount of time while families get back up on their feet. We're unique because we're a collaboration between Olive Crest. So I could talk about this for a long time, but we started in Chicago in the early 2000s and then have spread across the country and have, in each location across the country, there's another organization that they become a program under. So in Southern California, Olive Crest is our organization. So sometimes some people get a little confused on your Olive Crest, but your Safe Family is the answer in Southern California is yes, both. But just so you can kind of see where we are positioned. And then really the only way that we're able to do the work that we do is by the church community. We really rely on churches to be the hands and feet of Jesus out there in the community, and it's really the only way that we're able to function. And then we work a lot with nonprofit organizations, social service providers, so it's really a collaborative effort. What it all comes down to, and I think when I first started learning about Safe Families, it's kind of like, well, yeah, it makes so much sense. It's something that, like, it's not a new concept. It's not anything that is too too new in our communities, but it's just something that the church has been doing for a long time. I know a lot of times when I talk to families, they'll talk about, my mom had someone stay with them for a couple months when, like, a high school student that didn't have family, or over, like, a summer break, they would welcome someone into their home. I think it's been a part, and maybe you guys are thinking of someone that had done that. So it's something that the church has been a part of. There's just, through Safe Families, a little more structure and it's more of a movement now, but it's a movement of compassion. That's what we all come down to, grounded in relationship. Everything we do comes back to building relationships with the families that we're serving, and we're focused on hospitality. Our whole measure of success is, were we willing to offer hospitality to those that need it most in our communities? And so we have three main goals, and there's a couple of things that make us different. So I think the easiest way to compare us, and as you're thinking about this, you might be like, oh, it sounds like foster care. And I think that is something that is easy to compare us to, because there's really nothing else in our community that looks like people in the community welcoming kids into their home. But there's some ways that make us really different, and those also go back to our main goals. The first is early intervention. So because we're a voluntary program, we really like to be there for families the first time they're experiencing some sort of crisis. So the first time they're experiencing homelessness, the first time they're out of a job, the first time they're leaving a domestic violence situation. One, because we'd love to be there before it becomes a cycle in their lives. It doesn't mean that we're not going to be there for families that there is a cycle of abuse or homelessness or any of that. But if we could be there the first time and extend community, we would just hope that they'll be able to continue as a stronger family down the road. Another reason for this with early intervention is we know that crisis builds upon crisis. When people are working in crisis mode and really survival mode, I've realized that a lot of the families we work with are really just surviving day by day and literally living paycheck to paycheck, and a lot of times not having ends meet. And so when you're working in that kind of mentality, you might make decisions that you might not necessarily make because you're just trying to survive. Another main goal is child abuse prevention. And we know that there's a lot of amazing organizations out there that do child abuse prevention, and everyone that does that has a different angle for how they do that. But with Safe Families and going back to what we started with, it's all about relationship. So one of the examples that we give is if we can picture a single mom in our community, which is really typical. I'd say 99% of the families we serve are single moms, although the past couple weeks we've been seeing way more single dads, and I think that's going to be a trend we're going to start seeing, which I have such a soft spot in my heart for our single dads because they're just doing the very best they can. But if we picture a single mom who is the sole provider for an apartment, I know that there's a statistic that in Orange County, if there's someone working minimum wage, they would have to work 144 hours to be able to rent a two-bedroom apartment. So it's just, nearly impossible for families that are working so hard to provide for their families. So if you picture a single mom, she's working that job, she might have to take a second or a third job, which is also really common, to be able to make ends meet. And if she takes that job might be overnight, a night shift, which is also really common. So in that kind of crisis, because we know that it's not necessarily the crisis that causes child abuse, it's crisis paired with isolation. So in that crisis, if she's isolated, if she doesn't have anyone safe, if her neighbors might also be unsafe people that she doesn't want to trust her kids with, if she's like that example I gave in the beginning, if her family is not safe or they're, you know, dealing with their own addictions, then she may not have people that can watch her kids. So she might be tempted to be able to provide. She'll leave her kids possibly at home alone overnight so that she can work that shift. And maybe overnight, if she leaves the 10-year-old in charge and there's a 3-year-old at home, if that 3-year-old gets into the stove and burns themselves, and then social services is called, you can see how it keeps escalating, it becomes child abuse and neglect. So you can see it's not necessarily just the crisis, it's when you pair that crisis with isolation. So if we say, as the church, how can we be a part of preventing that isolation, bringing people into community, and just helping them know that they're seen and loved and cared for, our hope is that we can prevent child abuse in that. Our third main goal is family support and stabilization. So everything we do, we really see ourselves, like someone said at the beginning, as foster care prevention. That's really boiling us down. But we're saying, how can we be a part of being on the prevention side of not waiting till it gets bad enough to step in to help families? We know that there's a lot of great services for families once they get to that point. But how can we say, we're not going to wait until it gets bad enough to step in? We're not going to wait until there's abuse and neglect and social services is removing kids. How can we really care for families to stabilize them before they even get to that point? So that's really our mission and our goal, and we see the church as being such a vital part of that. So I'm probably going over my time, so I'm going to go really quick for this last part. So what are some of the reasons for safe families use? I think some of these are pretty obvious. Homelessness is one of our big ones. I know we've worked with Trellis before in the past, working with some of those homeless clients that they're working with. But like I said, it is so difficult to actually rent an apartment here in Orange County. Even if people have the funds to rent an apartment, I think the apartments in Orange County are like 98% full. So there's really not even a vacancy a lot of times. We work a lot of families who are also renting rooms. That's really typical, where there's a whole family just living in one room. We've worked with some families that are living in a room. Maybe it's a mom and two kids, and then mom gets pregnant again and is going to have a third kid, and the landlord's like, well, and landlord, that's kind of used loosely, but landlord says, well, two kids was fine, but three kids isn't, you have to get out. And so then all of a sudden this whole family is homeless, and the mom's pregnant. And so we see, there was a season where we're seeing a lot of that. And so it's not that they didn't have a place, it's not your typical homeless family that you would think of, but it's just housing instability. Medical and hospitalization is also a big one. This was one that kind of surprised me when I started. I thought a lot of homelessness and drug abuse and all of that as crises, but what I've realized is a hospitalization could be a huge crisis for a family that's isolated. As you know, that if a family's in the hospital and they have other little kids, if the kids aren't the patient, they can't stay at the hospital overnight. And so we work with a lot of families that are isolated too. Just one real quick story on that, and then I'm gonna pass it back over, but it's one of my favorite stories. There was a mom that went into the hospital in Mission Hospital, so Mission Viejo area, and she was in the hospital for something pretty serious and something kind of life-threatening, but she didn't have any support for her 5-day-old baby and was going back and forth between the options and said, I think there's this family member out of state that could come in, but that ended up falling through, and she was here by herself and really had no support, zero support. And so as she is weighing the options, she was thinking, I don't want to be removed from my 5-day-old baby, which is understandable, and I don't want her to have to go into the system, which then brings a whole lot of other issues with it. So she was just going to refuse the treatment and go home. That was her choice. And so in that crisis, and thankfully one of the nurses and social workers at the hospital knew about us, so they gave us a call. Within a half hour, we were there at the hospital bedside filling out the paperwork with the mom. Within another half hour, it was just so cool the way God worked and pulled it all together. But within another half hour, the host mom was there by the bedside. I talked to that host mom recently, and she said they're both crying, and it was just a super sweet moment of her just saying, I'm here for you, I want to care for your baby, and as soon as you're ready to be reunited, you can have your baby back. And so it was just such a blessing for this mom to feel such a peace of knowing I can take care of myself, I can get the treatment that I need, and then I don't have to worry about my baby in the meantime. So host mom took the baby home for like a week, I think it was. Mom got the treatment she needed, and at the end of the week, they were all reunited without any court dates, without any social workers involved. It was all voluntary, and just a beautiful picture of the church stepping up and being neighbors. So really, again, all that these families have in common is isolation, and I think who's better equipped to reach out to those that are isolated than the church? I think that's what we're here for. So to give some more in-depth and personal experience, we have our host mom, Jen Javella, and she's going to share a little bit about her experience.
A little short. I'm Jen Javella, for those who don't know me, and my husband Mark and I attend Grace, and we've been a certified host family for about 1.5 years. We have hosted 7 kids, ages 8 months to 9 years. We've had them anywhere from 2 days to 6 weeks, and it's really just an honor and a privilege to be a host mom, to be that person that you can imagine. I have 3 kids of my own, and for them to even go have a sleepover at a friend's house, you know, you worry about them. So you can just imagine what it's like to be a mom handing your child off to a stranger. So to be that person, to welcome them into our home, is truly just amazing. The other thing that I love about it is that it really is like being a missionary in your own home, and you get to do it with your kids and your husband, and it's something that you all do together. There's my daughter up there snuggling with a little girl that was at our home, and then my 2 teenage boys on top of a rhinoceros, it looks like, with another little guy. But to just have them come in and to see my kids, love them and play with them, bathe them, feed them, pray with them, there's just nothing like it. To watch my kids give up their bedrooms, give up their beds, share their toys, it's changed us all. I often tell them, like, you guys are doing hard things. Like, you're kids, and you're doing hard things. You're loving people, when they're at their lowest, going through this crisis. So one story that I like to share is when Cosette, that little girl in the corner, came. The Safe Family staff person who dropped her off was going to catch a flight, and so she could not stay and help with passing her off. But she was like, here she is. She has no diapers, no wipes, and 1 change of clothes. So this was our 2nd hosting, so I didn't really know much. So I'm standing in the garage with my 3 kids, and I was just like, okay, well, the first thing we need to do is go to the grocery store and get diapers. Like, that's the first thing we're doing. But as I went to pick up this little girl, her diaper was no longer holding the contents of what it needed to hold. So the look on my kids' faces was just like, the 2 boys were just like, what the heck? Like, what are you going to do now, Mom? Like, so they went and played video games. And then my sweet little girl, thank God for daughters, because she went and put on a dust mask and was just like, okay, what do we do? So I was like laughing hysterically. Here's this sweet little girl you can see she has a black eye, you know, and like a homemade haircut. And I was just like,
okay, like, Jesus, take the wheel. Like, so I put Kate on her bike. I'm like, okay, this is like a scavenger hunt, honey. Like, you go around, who would have a diaper? And you go find a diaper. But it really, like, that story just, like, totally just shows what safe families. Like, it can be messy and unpredictable, but God just comes in, and there's just so much love and laughter, and you get to learn that you can do hard things. I asked my kids what their favorite part of safe families is, and Tyler, age 16, said, "I like making new pals and helping families in need by showing them Jesus." And there's Kate with one of our little guys. Ben, age 14, said, "I like the feeling of knowing you are doing something for someone that could change their life." And then Kate, my little girl, said, "I like the feeling of knowing you are..." Oh, that was Ben. "I like not being the youngest kid and getting to care for kids that are younger than me." So it really is just an honor, and thank you so much for picking us. I need those diapers. I really need those diapers. So thank you so much.
See why I brought my people? Aren't they good? So we need to wrap up, but there's a bunch of different ways that we can get involved, which all of our representatives will be down in the fourth and fifth grade room to talk about. But really, the host families, we definitely need in our Grace Church a lot of host families. There are so many needs in our community. It's crazy. We could honestly get an email about every day that somebody in our community could really help out others in need. But as we said, when Jen or any of the other host families have somebody at their home, it could end up being diapers, but think if you made dinner for them, how Jen could be able to do those other things. Think if you offered to give her respite for just an hour by taking some of those kids that she might have in her family to the park. Think about just doing one little something so all of us can really support our host families. If host family is too big and crazy for you, you could also be a family friend in those kind of ways. So those are just some little examples. But there is a sign-up sheet in the back if you have any interest in and any of the things we've talked about today. We'd love to talk to you more about it, and if you can come down to our room after you're done. But thank you so much for your support and donations today. It'll really help our families. Thank you, ladies.
I just want to say thank you to these women who just came and shared. I don't know about you, but it expanded my heart in a really sweet way, and an opportunity to see, I'm taking it off. An opportunity to just, and I hope we see it as a gift, to be able to partner, as was mentioned by Sherry, that's what Philippians, Paul's about partnering with for the gospel, and that's what we're doing today. We're partnering with these ministries. So thank you, Leanne. Thank you, Jessica, or Jesse. I love the name Jesse. It's my daughter's name. Jen, and Diane, and Penny, where are you? There you are, Penny. Truly, thank you for sharing your hearts with us. I'm going to send you out to your rooms with these verses from 1 Peter. "Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. I'm skipping a few things. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. Amen." Go and serve.